When astrophysicists try to account for all the matter in the universe, kind of a cosmic audit, things, they just don't add up. The ordinary matter, the stuff that makes up the stars and the planets, the mountains, the trees, you and me, is only, by their estimates, a small chunk of all the matter out there, about 4%, 4% of everything. The rest, they reason, is unseen stuff, dark matter, dark energy. The astrophysicists know if they know it's there, or else the books wouldn't balance, but they don't know really what it's made of or exactly what it does. Last year, from observations of the Bullitt cluster of galaxies, came the best proof to date that dark matter exists. And this week, researchers unveiled a new map of the dark matter at a meeting of the American Astronomical Society. It's also been published online in the journal Nature. And joining us now to talk about the map, which you can see on our website at sciencefriday.com, is Richard Massey. He's a postdoctoral researcher in astronomy at Caltech in Pasadena, and he joins us from KPCC in Pasadena. Welcome to Science Friday.
Hello there. Thank you very much.
How are you? There's a beautiful map. It's not the real colors of what's going on out there.
Well, that's actually the crux of the problem, that dark matter is invisible. So we can't see it, and we really can't make a map using the real colors because there aren't any. So we've had to make this false color map, yeah. Sure.
Now, how do you know? How did you get it to show up if it's dark?
Right, and that's the crux of the issue, that we can't see it directly, so we have to find some way of sort of probing its indirect effects on other things that we can see. Now, there have been a few ideas about how to do this. The best way to visualize sort of the large-scale structure of the dark matter and see how it affects the universe as a whole is by a technique called gravitational lensing. So the idea is that we can't see the dark matter itself, but we can see galaxies which are behind it, just ordinary, very normal galaxies. Now, the light from those galaxies has to pass through the dark matter on its way to us. And during that journey, it's affected by the dark matter. It's almost as if we see the dark matter in silhouette against these distant galaxies. But it's not really silhouette. It's not that the galaxies appear fainter. It's just that they actually appear distorted because the dark matter acts like a lens and alters the path and the shape of the light coming from the galaxies.
So it interacts with the gravity?
Yeah, so that's the thing about the dark matter, is that it doesn't interact in any other way. That's why it doesn't shine. It doesn't even reflect light. But it does interact through gravity. And so all the ways of seeing or inferring that there must be some dark matter, adding up the books, is from its gravitational effects on other things.
Now, if it doesn't interact with the particles that we normally have around us, but it does interact with gravity, I had this thought, maybe I'm totally off about it. Could it be that the particles that carry gravity be in the dark matter realm, which we don't know what that stuff is yet, right? Instead of the normal matter realm, and perhaps that's why we're finding it so hard to find particles that carry gravity.
Right. The two questions are sort of inextricably linked in that dark matter was first postulated in the 1933 by Fritz Zwicky, and he was doing his adding up his books on these spiral galaxies which were spinning way too fast to be held together by the gravity of just the stars that they contained. He totted up the amount of mass in the stars, found these galaxies would fly apart if it weren't for some additional dark matter. And so he postulated the idea that, well, you know, okay, there must be some dark matter there that we can't see, but is sort of acting as a gravitational glue to hold these galaxies together. But equally, people have suggested that it's not the amount of matter or the amount of mass that's wrong in this galaxy. It's actually the laws of gravity that we've got wrong. And people have suggested various different alternative theories to Einstein's general relativity, which is the best theory of gravity that we have at the moment. Now, they've got a lot of work to do because, I mean, Einstein was a very clever guy and you know, they've got to make a lot of things match with these new predictions of what the gravity might be. And they're having a lot of difficulty with these latest results, particularly from the Bullitt cluster, that it seems even if gravity is wrong, then there is some – they need some dark matter there as well.
Describe what we see when we look at the map that you've created. It's a very interesting map.
So, yeah, the first thing that strikes me about looking at this map is actually that there are enormous voids. There are these vast regions of space in which there's absolutely nothing at all. But then sort of around these voids, there's a crisscrossing network of strings of dark matter, very, very long and and relatively thin strings of this mysterious sort of dark substance, and that forms a scaffolding, crucially, in which the ordinary matter, that everything that we know and can touch and feel, in fact, everything that science sort of knows about, basically, all this ordinary matter falls into the dark matter scaffolding, is later constructed and built up into the galaxies and stars and planets that we find ourselves on today.
Is it trapped by those strings?
It's well, yeah, in effect, it's they're both gravitationally attracted to each other, so over time they just end up fall together. And importantly, the dark matter has this sort of initial lead time over the ordinary matter. It starts collapsing into these structures very early on in the universe, when everything else was just a fairly smooth soup. So the dark matter collapsed first, and then sort of by its own gravity pulled in the ordinary matter and helped concentrate it into the kind of densities where you can begin to form stars.
So you can see clumps of dark matter wherever there are clumps of galaxies, for example.
That's exactly right. The two are really closely linked, and we wouldn't have the kind of universe that we find ourselves in today without the dark matter, both for its scaffolding thing and also in an exact analogy, actually, to the dark matter holding spinning galaxies together. The universe expanded away from the Big Bang in a large explosion, and without the dark matter, it would have just would have exploded. Everything would have been diluted, and we wouldn't have found habitable life. The dark matter, in exactly the same way as it held the spinning galaxies together, it's held the whole universe together, and it's been an a vital element in its role of shepherding the galaxies and forming a habitable universe today.
But having the map, does it answer the question about what the dark matter is?
Yeah, so we've certainly answered the first question about where it is, and the question of what it is going to involve lots of research, which we hopefully need lots of scientific funding for over the next years. It does give us a few sort of tantalizing hints about what it might be and what some of the properties are. I mean, for example, one of the big questions about this dark matter is, let me just emphasize, we're really starting at the very beginning here. We have very little idea what this substance is, even though it completely dominates the mass of or the budget of matter in the universe. So one of the tantalizing hints that it gives us is to do with the dynamical temperature of the dark matter. In other words, how sort of warm or cold it is. If it's warm, it's this sort of lightweight particles which whiz around the universe and end up just moving really fast or hustle and bustle. If it's cold, it sort of sits more sedately where it's put and just stays there.
Dr. Well, Massey, you have to hold that thought.
Okay.
They say we have to break away. So stay with us. You've joined the crowd of people I've rudely interrupted. So stay with us. We'll be right back and talk more with Richard Massey about dark matter and talk of the Nation Science Friday. So don't go away. We'll be right back. I'm Ira Flatow, and this is Talk of the Nation Science Friday from NPR News. You're listening to Talk of the Nation Science Friday. I'm Ira Flatow. We're talking this hour with Richard Massey, talking about dark matter. But first, a program note coming up on Monday. Neil Conan talks with Iraq's acting ambassador to the United Nations about President Bush's new strategy for that country. And Faisal Isdrabadi gives his response to the challenges now facing Iraq and takes your questions. So here's your chance to question an Iraqi official. That's Monday on Talk of the Nation from NPR News. As I say, we're talking this hour about dark matter. When I rudely interrupted Richard Massey, you were talking about tell us what you were talking about. I don't want to rudely interrupt you again.
Oh, well, I was just saying that, yeah, I mean, the holy grail, really, in this field is going to be to try and figure out what this dark matter is. And we've made our first steps along these lines. We know it's some sort of cold dark matter, and we know it's there, but we still need to figure out what on earth it is.
1-800-989-8255 is our number. I'm sure there is lots of interest in this. Let's go to the telephones. Let's go to Lewis in Newport, New Hampshire. Hi, Lewis.
Hi, how are you doing?
Hi, how are you?
I'm doing all right. I was wondering whether dark matter is something that's entirely out there or whether we're speculating that there may be dark matter locally. And if we're talking locally, whether we're talking about floating around within our galaxy or whether we may actually be surrounded by dark matter at every moment. We just don't know it because we can't recognize it.
Yeah, you're quite right. I mean, there's no need to be worried. This stuff doesn't do anything to us. That's the kind of point and the problem that we've had in finding it. But sure, it's everywhere. It's all around us. It passes, whizzes through us all the time. We don't notice it. We don't notice it.
Well, why? If we're just 4% I mean, the matter that we take for granted every day is just 4%. And dark matter is, you know, 25%, and dark energy is 75%, 70%, something like that. Why do we exist at all? I mean, why do we have 4% of us when all the other stuff is dark?
Now, there's a very deep philosophical question. I mean, some people would say, yeah, we're here and we're the sort of end result of the universe. We're the ones who observed it. But I don't know. It's lucky for us that we do exist, though.
What other kinds of experiments can you perform to see? Is this the way now that scientists will be looking to see dark matter through this lensing effect? Is this the standard operating procedure now?
It's now about the most exciting way of seeing it on very large scales, of tracing out the sort of filamentary distribution of matter on the very largest scales in the universe that really govern its overall evolution. It's not as useful as finding it near us. And you know, there are other astronomical techniques for finding it near us. For example, there's microlensing in our own galaxy, and we can also look at the way that stars are rotating very quickly around a black hole at the center of our galaxy. But there are ways to see things that are invisible nearer to us. But then, of course, particle physics and particle accelerators have a very important role to play in actually getting sort of some physical stuff in a laboratory.
Does the dark matter tend to counteract the dark energy, the repulsive force?
Slowing down
the expansion, perhaps.
Right. That's exactly right. There's a giant cosmic tug of war going on. The universe expanded from a Big Bang initially, and the mass of the dark matter is trying to pull it all back together, just like the mass of the Earth pulls an apple back down to the Earth. The dark energy is something even more mysterious, and that's another step on from that. It acts as some sort of strange anti-gravity on large scales, which is actually accelerating the expansion of the universe and making the whole thing happen faster. Mm-hmm. So it's a giant tug of war.
Earlier this hour, we were talking about science funding, and I think we should point out that your data for this map comes from the Hubble Space Telescope. And right now, it looks like the latest news this week is that the Hubble is saved, right?
Yeah, that's great
NASA,
news. I mean,
NASA announced a service mission.
Yeah, it's lovely. It's wonderful. I can't emphasize enough how amazing the Hubble has been in terms of its astronomical research output for researchers, and it's had such a huge impact in terms of visibility and popular outreach. It's one of NASA's greatest achievements in terms of public interest per dollar spent. It's an astonishing gem of an instrument.
Yeah, I couldn't have said it better. Thank you for taking time to join us, and good luck to you on your imaging.
Thank you very much.
Happy hunting. Richard Massey is a postdoctoral researcher astronomer at Caltech in Pasadena.